I'm Anora, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Anora. We love you, Anora. Lots and lots and lots.
Thank you. All right. I'm gonna put my timer on so I don't go over crazy or under crazy. Well, no guarantee. It's great to be here and great to see you guys. And I want to thank the committee for asking me to speak. It's an honor. I was telling a friend last night that two of my sponsors have spoken at this conference out here at Mormon Lake Lodge. So it's cool in this room, and so it's nice to be a part of that. And it's nice to see you guys and just all the love in the room. And it's been an honor. I've gotten to see a lot of you get sober and get your lives back, graduate, get somebody else, help them get sober, see them get their life back, and it's been a real gift. And just really, really grateful. My sobriety date is April 10th of 1999. Thank you. I didn't plan it, obviously. It just happened. But thank you anyway. And I got sober in New Mexico.
Wow.
Yeah. So welcome, New Mexico. The first Askewpaw I came to was out here at Mormon Lake Lodge, and it was in 2001. And my husband and I ended up moving to Flagstaff. He was my husband at the time. We ended up moving to Flagstaff, and part of that was because we'd come out to Askewpaw, and we were not welcomed. So just so you know, people were like, "Oh, you're from New Mexico, that place nearby." I'm like, "Are you kidding me? I drove like 15 hours to be here." What? So anyway, New Mexico, welcome, especially way more than anybody else there. And it's good to be here. I lost a friend this week, and from this disease, and I didn't know her as long as some of the people in this room, but I knew her for a good long time, and you know, my heart goes out to her family. My heart goes out to me and the friends in our community that are mourning our friend this week. And I did bring tissue up here, but I just want to say that I feel my friend Jan here tonight, and I know that she is still kind of checking things out to see how this is going. You know, I feel her. I've felt her with me all week. And you know, I moved to Flagstaff to live my dreams, to go to college the right way this time, not the way where you just like walk out of class and get a bunch of F's and shoot heroin a week later. I don't know. It happens. It happens. You know, you fall into the needle. Whatever. Crack's great. I don't know. It is. And you know, I moved out here to live my dreams, and my dream was to be a music teacher. And so I went to college, and then I was a music teacher, and then my PE teacher was Jan. And the first Friday that we were, because we talked together a lot, you know, the first Friday I was like, "Oh, Jan's an alcoholic," because by Friday she was kind of red in the face and just really wanted to get the fuck out of school, you know? And I didn't drink like that. I did not recognize Fridays. I did not have jobs where you had things like a weekend. The kinds of jobs I had, if you were there and somebody was actually paying you and printing out a check, it was definitely a place where you could drink and use on the job. So, but I get this about other alcoholics. Like, and I like that it was read tonight that some of us don't have to quite get so far down that road of like, you know, getting the good job and then losing it to get here. And that was my story. But Jan did. She got that job. And, you know, she tried to get sober a couple times. And that first Friday, I was like, wow, Jan's an alcoholic. That was in September. And every week, we'd have our meeting on Friday. And I was like, wow, I need to get this meeting short because Jan needs to get the fuck out of here and go drink. You know, no judgment, man. I get it. And I never said anything like, hey, Jan, I'm sober. I see you're a little, you know, loose with that paper by the end of the day. You know, you need some help? Or I never said anything. I just loved her. And I loved her. I loved that woman. She was amazing. And one day I was teaching and it was kind of a weird day in class and she walked in. And my birthday's in April. I told you that. And she said, hey, I saw, my husband's birthday is the same day but a year apart. And we didn't plan that either. Just so you know, that's him over there. Hi, honey. That's him. I know. I'm married for looks. Yes. I did. And, you know, she walked into the classroom and she said, hey, I saw your name on a board somewhere in town. Your Ben's name on a board somewhere in town. And I knew Jan was safe. And then she got her 1 year chip. You know, we taught together the next year. And the next year we taught together, and I really wanted her to get that two-year chip. I remember I bought her a coffee that day on her birthday, and I put a, you know, Roman numeral 2. I got a Sharpie. I'm a teacher. Got a Sharpie, circle and triangle. I made the top of her coffee look like a chip, you know, with the 2 in it. And I was really just hoping we'd go and get that chip. And Jan didn't go get that chip. And Jan's not with us. And I've, you know, this has been a really cool week. I was really excited to be here and just see all this beauty, all this life, you know, and the passion and the screaming and the whole bunches and all of it. And equally holding that place for the sadness and the deep sorrow of my friend. And that's sobriety for me today, so that I could actually just have both in my heart, you know. Yeah, that's a miracle. That's not where I came from. Where I came from was 6 years old, and I was the weird kid, maybe 5, I don't know, whatever. As early as you get, I was the weird kid. I know, it doesn't show now. It's fine. Ever. But I was a weird kid, and everybody knew it. And never fit in, never felt like I belonged, never felt normal or sane or whole. I was always trying to fix it, even at that early age. My first drink of alcohol, my family, My family had, you know, my stepdad had Italian family heritage, and so they had alcohol, they had wine, a little glass of wine at Thanksgiving dinner, and they put ice in it. His parents took over my bedroom, and so I had to, you know, climb up the ladder to sleep in the attic. I'm sure you guys know those ladders I'm talking about. And I remember feeling just a little woozy and thinking, that's the last time I put ice in that. And I don't know, I was probably 7 or 8 years old, but it was. But yeah, I got it right away. Like, I like the effect. So my first real binge was in 7th grade. I was the young weird nerd kid, and I was 11 years old. And your tears are beautiful. And, you know, my friend's mom had an open bar for us that she wasn't even there. She wasn't even around. And it was New Year's Eve, and there was like 7 or 8 of us. And she just had alcohol for us. And, you know, my parents didn't know. My friend was kind of the bad kid. That's why I liked her. And, you know, I just drank. I didn't know anything. I didn't have anybody like show me the ropes. And it was great. It was great. I felt so powerful all of a sudden. And, you know, I was a great dancer and not socially awkward at all. And finally didn't feel like the nerd and the weird kid. And it was just magical. And woke up the next morning with no hangover. And I guess it's because I was so young, I don't know. But I woke up just feeling amazing and thinking, I am definitely going to do that again as soon as I possibly can. And then my friends, they had stayed up after me and made up a bunch of stories about all the crazy things I did. And they really, like, rehearsed them. I could tell because they were all saying the same things, you know, about the crazy antics that I had done. And it turns out that I guess I picked the same kinds of friends until I got sober, because that happened to me until I got sober. People made up wild stories about my antics while I was drinking. And I gotta say, it never crossed my mind. Never crossed my mind that I was a blackout drinker. It didn't register. I mean, I just had some really good denial. I remember in the last couple of years before I got sober, I would think, so I had this job as a cocktail waitress in Albuquerque, and I would think, you know, I got a shift drink, which is great. Again, do not work anywhere where you can't be drunk and high on the job. That's, or just get, you know, get a different job. And yeah, it's illogical. And I do remember, like, I would get that shift drink and think, okay, I have a 45-minute window to get home, or I'm going to have, or all bets are off. And for me, all bets were off were waking up anywhere, day or night, with anyone, or ones, you know. Really, I mean, there was no, just all bets are off. And sometimes I would make the window. I think I made up the window. I don't think the window was really true. But in my head, I think, you know, like, I really did not have much control when it came to alcohol and drugs. I was basically just thinking, oh, I did not do drugs in high school, though, because that is bad. I didn't know they were great. So I missed that. I missed the memo on drugs are actually amazing. And, you know, I never got it. You know, in high school, I got a full ride scholarship to college from, like, every state in the country. And I got the presidential commendation for my SATs, but I was still in a blackout the morning that I took them. So I was like, I guess I, you know, I drove drunk to the SATs, and I would, like, be writing a section, and then I would hear the ding and wake up and move on to the next section. I don't really know what happened. I guess more of a gray out by that time, because I got really drunk with a boyfriend the night before. It never crossed my mind that maybe I should take him sober. I would do better. I don't know. I was in a lot of activities in high school, so, like, on the surface, I think I was a lot more well-liked than I felt inside. Inside, I just, you know, anytime I didn't have alcohol in the system, I just felt like that weird kid. And my stepdad wasn't an alcoholic. He raised me, but he was really angry, and that does fit into my story. He told me in kindergarten that I had to get a full ride scholarship to college or I wasn't going, and I didn't know what any of those words really meant, but I ended up getting one. So I just assumed that he was sane until I was in high school, and I had a 4.3 GPA cumulative, and he said that GPA wasn't high enough to get me into the community college. And I was like 17 at the time, and that's when I was like, oh, this guy's crazy. And I've been believing him my whole life. I wonder what else he told me. But he was a really angry guy at the time, and I'm really glad that I have him and that he's in my life. My father did not raise me. I would go see him in the summers, and he was an alcoholic. I'm glad I have two dads. because one passed away from alcoholic throat cancer 2 months after I got sober. So I was like 60 days sober and learning how to grieve. And I didn't know how to feel my feelings. The way that I drank, once I got off to college and I had all of that kind of rigid, oppressive stuff in my life, like out of my hair, I went really crazy. Like, I would get my friends to go with me to the laundromat, and we would like weigh my laundry, and it was like 60 pounds of laundry, you know? And I thought that was super cool, and oh my gosh, I was just, I attended UNM, and I actually beat out a bunch of people to go to England. I lived in England for a year as an exchange student, and I did work really hard there because the first week I showed up late because it was my 21st birthday, and I wanted to drink in the United States for my 21st birthday, which is coming up in a few weeks. And I wanted to drink in the States for my 21st birthday, but turns out you're not supposed to do that when you tell people you're going to another country to go to school. So their police pulled me into the office the day after I got there and basically gave me the shape up, we're deporting you. And it was really terrifying and effective. And I studied really, really, really hard and got, you know, good grades. It was really hard. But I studied, and every night I drank and got high and did tons of drugs with my friends, really fabulous European drugs. It was great. It was really good. And So I don't know, but they outdrank me. I don't know. They talk about the allergy, and I haven't been back to Europe sober, but it'll be really interesting, you know, some days I hope to go again. They really outdrank me, pretty hardcore. So that was pretty interesting. You know, that whole time, like, I drank like a pig, I used like a pig, and my life was kind of, like, still going. But then when I got back from England, I got depressed over a boyfriend and a breakup, and just really, like, I don't know, a couple things happened. Like, I had a landlord just lock me out of my apartment, you know, and all of my, because there was a gas leak, and he didn't want to deal with it, and, you know, I had no self-esteem by that point. I was just like, I was a shell and I didn't even know it. You know, like looking back on it, I was just a shell already, you know. It had already just taken its toll. And so that was really hard. And then, you know, I just walked out of class one day and didn't come back. And a week later, I started smoking crack and fell right into the needle, and that was really great. We had a fabulous relationship. I didn't really do a lot of employment at the time, per se, but I stayed busy all the time, and it's a lot of work. You know, I did whatever it took to just keep doing that. I'm not one of those people that does that stuff and drinks simultaneously. I know a couple of those people, and hats off, but I was one of those, like, I'll stop one and do the other, you know, for a while, and then I'll stop that one and then go back to the other one. So, you know, kind of switching back and forth. That was really the only switching that I did. I didn't swear to, you know, I thought sober was drinking beer and smoking pot. I really did. I was like, oh, I'm going to get sober. But it didn't cross my mind that meant, like, well, you know, this other stuff. So, and then, you know, I had the identity, which was cool, of being a drug addict and a junkie. And you did a bunch of geographics from New Mexico, went to New Jersey, and went to Seattle, and kind of came back and forth, and had a boyfriend, and just chaos, you know, and all around me was like my people, you know, my family and my friends that I had known that were just kind of looking at my life like, what's going on, because we're not really sure what's going on here. And just kind of, is this what we think it is? And you know, I just kept kind of plowing through. I drove drunk a lot. It was actually my favorite pastime, and consciousness was my main trigger. Man, when I woke up, I had to fix that shit. You know? So, that was really, you know, I was kind of around the clock with whatever I was on at the time, whatever I was into, or whatever was accessible, you know. I was kind of around the clock, and, you know, when I would drink, I still had a lot of blackouts, and they were getting worse. And the anger was getting worse. So pretty much every time I got in a blackout, I was guaranteed to get in at least one bar fight. Then I was told later, I didn't believe it. I was like, oh, I wouldn't do something like that. But I did, and looking back on it, I get it now. You know, like, nobody cares about me that much. I was just so self-centered, you know, to the extreme. Had no clue what a raving lunatic I was, and you know, I got one DWI, so I quit driving because I thought driving was the problem. But, you know, like on my bike, I hit a parked car. Drunk. You know? Like, you think you could steer around a car? You're on a bike. But no. So, you know, I just had this kind of like sad little shell of like drifting around and getting in fights and, you know, scheming and planning and trying to figure things out. And the last job I had before I got here, I was there for like 4 hours before they strongly hinted that I should leave or they were going to call the cops. So that was the last official where they print the checks out for your job. I don't think I asked for a check on that one. I might have. But yeah, I had no intention of getting sober. And I was in Seattle, and my boyfriend and I had an apartment, and it was just like filled with paraphernalia to the brim. And I got sick and went in the hospital, and our landlord found out what we were doing and kicked us out in the middle of the month, so I was going to be homeless in Seattle. And and I thought, I'm not that hard yet, you know, but I need to like just do like a little mini scheme so that I, yes, thank you, Tyler. I love you, Tyler. I'm not that hard yet, but I will be. I just need a few months to get my shit together and make a better long-term plan here. So I started calling people like family and friends, and nobody would let me live with them. No, nobody wanted me to stay with them. And I was really shocked, you know. I mean, I had gotten in lots of fights with my mom. She would, like, be crying and screaming. I'd call her from some payphone. Yes, this was before cell phones. I would call her from some payphone, and she'd be crying and screaming, and I'd scream back and hang up on her and whatever. And I did definitely call my grandparents in a blackout on Christmas, because when I came out of the blackout, I was like, oh, it's Christmas. I need to call my grandparents. So I called my grandparents, and they were like, yeah, but you already called this. Well, yeah, I know I already called you, but I really just wanted to talk to you twice, you know, Merry Christmas. So nobody was going to let me stay with them. And my my mom and my stepdad, that went down the wrong tube. Get it out. Okay. My mom and my stepdad said they would let me stay with them if I went to rehab for 30 days. And I like what Brian said. What'd you call it?
Shake and bake.
Shake and bake. Yeah. So, shake and bake. That's good. And so I thought, well, that's annoying. Like, I'm not going to be able to drink and get high for 30 days. But I guess it could be worse. You know, it'll give me time to cook up a good plan. And I did sneak paraphernalia and drugs into the rehab. I didn't end up using it, but I did sneak it in my coat in the lining. So if you work at a treatment center, just, you know, keep that in mind. That option's available for those of us who are serious, you know? And, you know, I really that was it. I was just going to call him for 30 days and get a nice plan and move on with my life. And I went through detox, and I gotta say, it's the only detox I ever went through that was medically managed. So it was really easy. I finally had like one really easy detox, and had pretty much everything in my system at that point. I might have been lacking like one thing. I don't know. I don't think I had had my hands on any mushrooms in a while, but pretty much everything was in my system, and they were horrified. Oh, my mom worked at the rehab, but not in the chemical dependency unit. She worked, it was like a state rehab, so there was like physical rehab, and she's a nurse, so she was a rehab nurse, and she was the department head of the rehab. But she knew the rehab, chemical rehab counselors really well, and they knew me, and or knew of me, and so they took my clothes and made me wear the pajamas because they knew I was a flight risk, and that's true. I was definitely a flight risk. And but so I detoxed, and I was really excited because I was going to get to go to my first meeting, and not because I wanted to go to a meeting, but because I wanted my clothes. You know, I wanted to get out of those fucking pajamas, and I didn't care about meetings. I had no plans except for just to keep going until whatever I burned out. It's better to burn out than to fade away. And that song is before my time, just so you know. And so I was going to get my clothes, and I was going to breathe some fresh air because they wouldn't let me out. You know, they would let me out into this little courtyard to chain smoke, but they were like on me, you know, watching me the whole time. And I went down into the day room. Anybody here ever seen the day room? Yay, day rooms. And they have, you know, they have the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, and use some meditation books, whatever. It'd be grapevine. And I started reading the steps, and I got to the fourth step, and light started shooting out of the steps, and the room started spinning, and all this trash inside of me, all this garbage, just started to swirl up to the top, and I had this voice, the voice. That there was only one, I think. And I don't know, maybe there's a lot, but the voice said, working the steps would solve all my problems. And up until that second, I didn't think I had any problems. There were problems around, but they were all your fault. Or the system's fault. Or I had been wronged, or I had been harmed. You know, if you had my boyfriend's mom barking at you, you'd drink too. You know, you don't understand me. My dad's an angry dude. You'd drink too. You know, poor me. Poor me. I had every opportunity in my whole life, and I fucking just repeatedly threw them away over and over again. Self-centered in the extreme. I had no clue that all of those problems pointed inward. None. And some people say, oh, you know, you had a spiritual experience. That's lucky. I'm here to tell you, I have a hard head. There wasn't any getting sober in my picture. I didn't tell anybody that happened. For a long time, because I thought they would lock me up and really take away my clothes. So I just acted cool. And they gave me my clothes back, and I went to my first AA meeting, and it was a speaker meeting. It was a Friday night speaker meeting, and I walked into the room, and it was filled with clear honey, and it was flowing in and out of me, into you, and I knew I was home. And then I never had to be alone again. And I know that's not a lot of people's experience when they get here. I know that's not the norm. But I knew I could tell you anything and that you would understand. And I never had that my whole life, you know? And I never want to forget that, you know? It doesn't matter to me at all what you look like, what your story is, where you come from. We're the same, and I know that on a really deep level, you know? I could grab any one of you right now, and you would understand me. And nobody gets that anywhere else in this world, I don't think. Maybe other people get that. I don't know. But I feel it, like I felt with Jan. I knew it. I knew she was the same, you know? I like the, you know, how Burroughs talks about that cellular level, you know? Something, that kinship, you know, that the Big Book describes. God, when I read the Big Book, I was like, oh my God, looking out my window to see if people were in, like, watching me, like I was a science experiment. Like, they keep talking about me in this book. What is going on here, you know? And it took me a while to get to the spiritual experience, you know, that's when I realized that's what had happened. Like, yeah, I got sober on April 10th, 99. Two spiritual experiences in one day. And I gotta say, I walked into that meeting and Richard had this thing where the speaker didn't show up. Like every other Friday night, I got sober in Roswell, New Mexico. That's where I'm from. I am an alien. Get over it. And and it's really hot there. I like Flagstaff. Nice, cool. Sorry, Phoenix. Nothing against people that like hot weather. Richard got the speakers on Friday night for the speaker meeting. He had like 20 years at the time. The speaker never showed up. But, I mean, how many alcoholics do you know that, like, when they get asked to speak, they just don't show up? Much less over and over again, you know? So, okay, well, this was that my first meeting. Just happened to be one of those speaker didn't show up meetings. So he would just pick people to come up to the podium and get up and share. And I think it was because I was young and tiny and in like a hooker dress. It's not like I had a lot of clothes when I got here. And he just pointed at me and said, "You, get up and speak." And so I thought, all right, it's now or never, right? Because I just had this spiritual experience and like I knew something, you know? I knew something was... had changed that inward reorganization. I didn't have words for it, you know. I've been upheavaled, you know. And so I got up and talked about like all the coke I slammed and all the deals that went down and, you know, all the shady stuff I did, like all the stuff that belongs on your, you know, fourth step. I just said it right there. Because I thought that's what we were supposed to do. It was my first meeting ever in my life. It's not like I knew the traditions. You know, nobody had like walked me through the rules or vetted me. None of that happened. Nope. I just got up and did it all. I went, okay. Then the next person that got up just blasted me from the podium. Just sat there and like... beat me down and talked about like how drug addicts aren't even allowed in these meetings and okay, so full disclosure, I'm a raving lunatic alcoholic, but when I got here, I had no clue. I thought I was a junkie, right? Because in my mind, that's cooler. And sorry, it's true, but sorry. And I think it also meant that, you know, you can't drink, right? Drinking was always my number one. Drinking was always my first love. My go-to, my blackout, I always went back to drinking. I didn't know that first night when I broke every living tradition known to man. So I was really, really pissed at George. Really, really pissed. I was just sitting there seething, which is good because anger was the only emotion that I could feel at the time. So I was really able to tap into that. Then, the next person that got up, she had a whole year of sobriety and also slyly identified as a drug addict and defended me from the podium. First sponsor! Yes. So, that's how those things go. I would go to meetings because I had that resentment against George. and I would say, "Hi, George." And I would sit down right in front of him and glare at him. I did that for months. I stayed sober on resentment for months. It was great. People say, "Oh, be nice to the alcoholic and be careful and treat him with kid gloves." And that's how I hope I am. That's how I hope I've been for some of you when you've come in, right? But that was not my story, and that's apparently not what I needed. Who's to say if somebody had actually been nice to me, if I would have ever come back? I don't know. I'm not saying go out and be mean to people. I'm not. I'm just saying, like, this whole thing of, like, who gets to be here? Who's here tonight? You know? Like Brian was saying, like, you stay sober long enough, you go to funerals. And they're sober funerals or they're drinking and using funerals. They're not mid-ground. Like, went off into the sunset to have a glass of wine every night. They're not. You know? We just don't. I haven't seen it. And if you want to show me a case afterwards, I'll be here all weekend. I'm not staying here tonight. I'm staying with my husband and my puppy at my house. But I'll be here all weekend. If you want to, you know, you want to challenge me on that, you're welcome to. But no, I'm vicious. So I got sober, and I didn't know how to live. And, you know, I had that spiritual experience that said, working the steps would solve all my problems. So I did. I got a sponsor, that one that defended me, and I did my fifth step with her, but it was in a Sonic. And after that, I was like, she was really, really busy, and we were having a hard time connecting. And so she had me meet her in a Sonic. So I was telling her, like, some really nasty stories. Really nasty. You know what I'm talking about. In Sonic. There were people in there. Anyway, after that, my sponsor was Sandy. She lives in Roswell. She's still, like, she pulled me up, you know. She just pulled me up out of the darkness. And she had, like, 25 years when I got sober, which was just an extraordinary amount of time. She's, if you ever meet her, you'll meet her someday, I'm sure. She's little, and she's old. Do not tell her that, but she is. Now, she's even littler and older. And she is just pure light, just pure love, you know? And she was really old school with me in sponsorship and said, you know, you pass down your experience. You don't make shit up. She didn't say shit. She did. She has cussed a little bit, but mostly not. She's a lady. A little teeny lady. But there were a couple times when she got tough on me. And one of those times was, like, you know, I had all this anger and I didn't have any friends. And I was the only, like, young, sober person in town for, like, a decade. I got sober when I was 24, and, like, the next person up for me was, like, 34 or 35. And looking back on it, he looked like an old man. So, anyway, aging is weird. I didn't have any friends, you know? And I finally met this friend, but she was really mean to me. And my sponsor, like, laid down the law and said, "You will not be friends with her anymore. She's mean to you." And that was one of the only times that she, like, really put her foot down. After I got about a year, she was like, "Honey, you don't have to keep calling me every day." And I was like, "No, but I do. I do have to keep calling you every day." And I would, like, ride my bike to her house and smoke cigarettes on her porch when she wasn't there, and let myself in her house with her permission and make a ham sandwich. I'm a vegetarian now. It wouldn't work. I'd have a cheese sandwich at Sandy's house any day. But that was my safe place. And, like, I learned to be safe there. And when I lost my father, I called my mom and my stepdad were at their cabin in Ruidoso, and they called me and said, "Do you want us to come? We'll come and get you." And I said, "Nope, I'm staying the weekend at my sponsor's house," because I didn't know how to feel anything but rage by the time I got here. And she took me to a meeting that night, and there was, like, a line out the door.
And people like hugging me. I still remember it. In line out the door. Like, these are people that I've known for like a month and a half. And they're there to support me in my grief. You know? But this, like, learning to feel my feelings thing, I mean, that's such a journey. You know, I feel like I got sober young, and my family lives long. I remember I was like probably 4 months sober, and I looked around and I hated every person in the meeting. I hated everyone's guts, and I thought, I'm going to be around you guys for the next 76 years. And I went to my sponsor and I was like, can I go to Al-Anon? Because I hate alcoholics. I do go to Al-Anon. She said, don't go until you have a year. That was her suggestion. I suggest you don't go until you have a year. She always was so good about framing it. I suggest you don't go until you have a year. And then you can do whatever you want. But this is your foundation. I worked the steps like my life depended on it. I choked and punched people until I did my fifth step. In sobriety, sometimes in meetings. I almost got kicked out of treatment because I could not quit choking and punching people. I did my fifth step. I did not choke and punch people after that. Occasionally I wanted to, but I did not. So there's something to the steps, and that's where my obsession got removed, was that fourth step. In the times that I've done it since, that's where other obsessions have been removed. I'm one of those keep working the steps people. I've got a big, long life in front of me. My circumstances are going to continue to change. How do I adapt to that? The answer is on the wall. Well, not literally on the wall, but you know what I mean. The answer's on the wall. Having a sponsor, sponsoring others, being in service, having home group, those were the things that I learned that I still do today. Because I'm not playing Russian roulette with my sobriety, you know? I mean, for me, a lot of it has been not ignoring the physical, mental, spiritual elements of this disease. I can't afford to. I clearly need to take better care of myself. I have a long ways to go. I need to kind of think it through, you know? Things like, how is my cholesterol? Do I exercise? Do I eat healthy? You know, for the emotional stuff and the things that over and over again, like, haven't been resolved for the steps. The book also says that we can seek outside help, right? Is that, you know? And when I got here, you know, I feel like there was more of a mentality of like, you're weak if you can't solve it through the steps. And I feel like that's changed since I've been here, but I still feel like, you know, that kind of hangs on. I'm going to tell you, like, I'm glad I see a counselor when I need to. I feel like that's made my heart more full and allowed me to take care of some of that family stuff in particular that just wasn't going anywhere year after year, you know. Relationship stuff is hard, and I have an amazing husband. I did scoop him up when he was 6 months sober. I did. We were friends for 6 months, and then I scooped him up. So this month, we will have been together 15 years. And I love him with all my heart. And a relationship is work. It's work every day. That's just my experience. It's not just my experience, though. That's what my sponsor taught me in Roswell. She said, love is an action. And if you want to be in a relationship, you put the work into it every day. And she was, you know, pretty direct and serious about that. Over the years, we've been able to support each other through hard times, good times. This year, I kind of had like a stack of good things, you know. I turned 40, which sounds weird, but it was really fun. We went to Vegas, and I got to see a show I'd always wanted to go see. And we bought a house. And then we have a backyard, so now I have my first puppy, so I'm a dog owner now. I had a cat that helped me get sober, and he died last summer. He was 14, and, you know, I had a couple reservations when I got here. One was my grandpa, and one was my cat, and I thought, you know, I don't really need to stay sober after either of them go. So I was 8 years sober when my grandfather died, and I guess I had the strength by that time to just keep going on and staying sober. I had to hide the shoelaces and stay out of bathtubs for a few months because I was pretty depressed. But I got through it, and I didn't drink, you know. And then same thing when my cat died, hide the shoelaces and stay out of bathtubs, you know. I knew what I needed to get through the grief things. There's great books on grief out there. You know, there's grief in this world, and I need to learn. You know, I need to learn everything I can and not have that contempt prior to investigation. For me, like those outside modalities and you know, books and self-care and, you know, other areas of support. I know what I need when I need it, but I know that this always comes first, no matter what. I am an alcoholic. When I say alcoholic, I actually know what that means. It's like this long list of everything I'm addicted to, which is way beyond just drugs. It's a long list, really, really long. For me, it's just way easier to just be an alcoholic. But I think that is all I have.